Welcome to another episode of Disrupt. I'm Robert Holly with Home Healthcare News. Before we dive into this special edition of Disrupt focused on the ongoing COVID-19 emergency, I wanted to give a thanks to our podcast sponsor, Homecare Homebase, whose powerful, cloud-based home health software streamlines virtually every aspect of your business. Spend less time on paperwork and more time delivering quality care to the patients who need you. Visit hchb.com to learn more. If you're listening to this podcast right now, odds are you're a home health or maybe home care provider looking for answers in an incredibly uncertain time. Since the first known domestic case in January, COVID-19 has spread to every single state and multiple U.S. territories. Earlier this month, the rapid spread of the virus prompted President Trump to declare a national emergency. It's led to a shortage of masks, goggles, and other medical supplies. CMS has issued numerous waivers and expanded the use of telemedicine. With the proper support, home health and home care providers can be a key piece of the COVID-19 puzzle, arguably the most important piece, especially if seniors and other individuals are confined to the home and as hospital capacity surges. To learn more about that support and how providers are tackling COVID-19, the coronavirus, I spoke to Bill Dombey. He's the president of the National Association for Home Care and Hospice, NAHC. We spoke on Friday morning shortly before a CMS call with home health providers, so chances are some of this information is already a little bit stale, but that just goes to show how the situation is changing on an hourly basis. Here's our conversation. Joining me now is Bill Dombey, president of the National Association for Home Care and Hospice. Bill, thank you for joining me for this emergency podcast.
Oh, glad I could be part of it.
Where are we talking to you from today?
Well, probably my best description is NAHC 20754, my home zip code. The NAHC offices themselves are formally closed, but NAHC operations are 100% in play. We had earlier set up a process of everybody working remote, so we have real-time access to our desktops. Phones are being forwarded to individuals, so we're full force operation, but we are sheltered in place.
Mm-hmm. And the home healthcare news staff is doing the same thing here in Chicago. So you're talking to me as I am in my own home. So for all our listeners out there, if the audio quality isn't quite what you're used to, we apologize, but we thought it was more important to get this podcast out the door. Bill, so I guess just to start off, you know, the situation is literally changing hour by hour with new developments. As we're talking now, you know, Friday morning, what are your priorities?
Number one priority relates to getting equipment to home care workers, home care and hospice workers. And that means all forms of equipment, including the high-level personal protection equipment, PPE. That has created an absolute issue in delivering home care in terms of the relationship with the patients and clients in home care as well. So that's the number one priority. Second, that is tied to that, is actually getting authorization to use technology to support the staff and reduce the frequency with which in-person visits would be needed, particularly around nursing services, but also therapy services fit into that mix. And the Medicare home health benefit, for example, is not equipped to deal with that. And that's what we're trying to see if we could get at least a temporary change in it to allow for telehealth type visits to be a substitute for in-person visits when clinically possible. And when defining telehealth, we mean even situations where just a phone call conversation could take place when you don't have the ability to put the higher level telehealth type equipment in there, or even use a smartphone with two-way audio video.
Because CMS also kind of lifted some HIPAA requirements too, right? Or at least made HIPAA a bit more flexible to allow providers to use things like maybe WhatsApp or FaceTime.
Yeah, there was a change that Congress authorized relative to a Medicare provision that provides payment to physicians and other practitioners to do telehealth services, but the home had never been an originating site. It's now allowed to be an originating site, and CMS expanded their concept of telehealth to include telephonic, but it has to be two-way audio video, and including references to using, say, Facebook. FaceTime. To address HIPAA issues, they then waived HIPAA or created some flexibility around that because, the encryption and protections of privacy that HIPAA requires generally are not going to occur between a senior citizen who's got a smartphone in hand talking to a physician. This does not connect into the home health benefit, but it does connect into the home.
We chatted about this earlier this week, I believe. Even though it's not directly related to home health, maybe there are some benefits when it comes to alleviating some face-to-face burdens, or am I mistaken?
No, our position is that the use of telehealth with a physician following the, you know, conditions that are put in the waiver, that being, you know, the kind of technology use, would take care of the face-to-face for both home health and hospice. We may learn whether CMS agrees with that. We believe they have no choice but to agree with it. But there's a call today with CMS where they're going to talk about telehealth and home health. We also have pending the question of whether or not hospice face-to-face would be accommodated. And we are pretty confident that both of them are within the waiver provision. And it would only make sense to put them both in the waiver position, because if you don't want an elderly person to leave the home to see a physician in the physician's office, does it make sense to have them leave the home to go get a face-to-face encounter to determine eligibility for the benefit? So the logic, I think, supports this as well as the law.
Yeah, and if I'm in CMS's position, I feel like I need to be doing every single thing possible to allow home health providers to be nimble, to be quick, to solve solutions at the local level.
Absolutely. And there's another side to that too, which is that every bit of advice is out there saying, if you're over 60, don't leave your home if you don't have to. Yep. So to leave your home to get an eligibility paperwork thing taken care of for Medicare home health or to meet the one for hospice would make sense. So we don't even think it's a radical kind of approach. We think it's just absolutely sensible to do so. And again, consistent with what Congress intended to.
So putting telehealth aside for a second, I'd like to circle back to PPE, personal protective equipment. We just ran a story published yesterday. It was in our newsletter this morning, Friday morning. It was kind of based on a survey out of New York, which really is where a lot of this is happening right now. And I think that survey found of home care, home health agencies, roughly 2/3 are already struggling with PPE. And looking ahead, the situation might become even more dire as patients are maybe discharged to home health services or more people are forced to shelter in place. Can you just kind of once again touch on how important, you know, ensuring that home health agencies and even home care agencies have the right equipment to do their job? Because if they don't, you know, caregivers are at risk, and then also, of course, patients are at risk.
Well, I mean, you said it well, and thank you for that story. It was a well-done piece, too. The New York situation, you know, is a harbinger of what we would expect to see nationally, and in the near term, there's little indication that there's going to be a sufficient level of supplies to meet all of the demand. Now, we know the CDC is starting to look at flexibility. It may sound astounding, but, you know, they even put out a message 2 days ago about how in the last resort using a bandana might be the case. But, you know, there's differences between treating people who are infected and treating people who are suspected infected and treating, you know, patients generally regarding what kind of PPE is needed. But the equipment that's necessary for any level of service now seems to be decreasing, but particularly on the more high level PPE, the N95s. We have to keep our healthcare staff safe because they need to care for patients. And it, you know, you can't sacrifice one staff member to take care of one infected person, because you need to have that staff person care for multiple infected individuals as well as those suspected or those who are not infected who you don't want to find get infected. So this is challenging hospitals, it's challenging nursing homes, it's challenging physicians' offices, and it absolutely is challenging home health agencies. So the number one message we're trying to give out is that don't jump to conclusions that you need the N95 PPE. Look over the CDC guidelines. You know, we have information we've put out there coming from experiences like at Evergreen Health, and you know, it's not always necessary to use N95, but there is equipment needs as simple as, you know, gloves and masks that are causing an issue. So you want to use what you have appropriately so that you don't waste it of sorts. That, not saying anybody is in fact wasting it, but we obviously have to be in a complete no waste modality while still having the protection appropriate.
On the Medicaid side, I know that a lot of states are trying to seek 1135 waivers. I think some have already been issued in Florida and most recently Washington. What's going on there?
You know, there's a lot of flexibility in Medicaid, and CMS is absolutely supporting home and community-based care with its waivers and its recommendations on waivers and its blanket waivers and the like, you know, because they realize that, you know, there is a very large Medicaid population receiving care at home and that home provides a solution. So we've, you know, been out there working with state associations to help work with the state Medicaid programs to request appropriate waivers. And, you know, one of them that we'd hoped would be a blanket waiver is not a blanket waiver, but I think CMS, you know, needs to reconsider it. But in the meantime, the states have to request it specifically, and that is the home health aide supervision requirement, you know, that should be waived and allow for either technology-based supervision or just skipping supervision at all. But, you know, Medicaid, you know, presents, you know, a unique challenge as well, because so much of the care they provide is home and community-based personal care services, as distinct from the skilled nursing and therapy services under the Medicare benefit. And, you know, you have issues of equipment there, but you have issues of competency among the workforce, and you have issues also related to the amount of time someone is spending in the home, you know, so that infection risks increase. So that's why equipment becomes a very important thing. Competency, training, absolutely essential. It's there. But everything that we're getting, you know, is indicating that the entire home care community is stepping up and trying to do anything and everything they can. But some home care companies have already put some workers into isolation or quarantine because they've been exposed. That, you know, is going to diminish the workforce. So that's another issue, where to go with the workforce. I actually had a conversation with a reporter yesterday from, I believe this was the USA Today reporter. I talked to so many yesterday who said, okay, with you know, stores closing down like Macy's and Bloomingdale's and Nordstrom's, does that make workforce available? You know, that may make some workforce available. I don't know how quickly that workforce can be gymmed up. But doctors' offices are also closing, you know, those doctor offices that deal with the kinds of things which are being postponed now. So we're suggesting that home care turn to such places for Medicare or Medicaid, you know, to physicians' offices and their nurses that might be there, or, you know, to be able to bring them in, or even school nurses and school nursing aides that might be there as a potential expansion of the workforce. So that's the next line of focus is going to have to be, you know, not just protecting the workforce, but expanding the workforce.
Yeah, and, you know, I think the LA Times came out with a story a couple of days ago that already 1 in 5 Americans have either been laid off or seen their hours or pay reduced. So along the lines of what you're saying, you know, I could definitely see that workforce being more available down the road, but there are a lot of training requirements for new caregivers. So it's not like people could just come in and start working right away. You know, they have to go through processes to actually deliver care in the home.
Well, obviously, you know, a home health aide, you know, is a special high-level certified person with training and competency testing. And you can't just snap your fingers and take somebody off of a retail desk at Nordstrom's and put them into a home providing home care aid services. So it will take time if that population is interested in doing this kind of work, because we know that it's difficult and dangerous now, as well as doesn't pay a great deal of money. But that's why we've started to, you know, say focus on where you have already professional caregivers who are not, otherwise working, such as school nurses and some of the nurses within physicians' offices. And some of those offices also have, you know, personal care aid type or nursing aid type level people that you might be able to qualify very quickly. So no perfect solution there, but, you know, this is the time for some creativity, and the degree to which it may necessitate some waivers and certifications, we've already seen CMS taking some of those steps, and I'm sure there will be more down the road.
There's been a lot of action out of Congress when it comes to emergency relief packages. I think it was 2 days ago now, or maybe it was yesterday morning, all the days are blurring together here as I'm working from home, where that paid sick leave related package was ultimately approved. Could you talk a little bit about what that could mean for the industry? And then specifically, I know that there's some questions, even just more generally, about where non-medical home care fits in to healthcare type exemptions.
Well, the relief package had a lot of common sense to it. You know, people out of work, you know, whether they are ill themselves or taking care of somebody that's ill. They included also a category of workers who have to leave work in order to care for children who otherwise don't have daycare available because their school is closed. And, you know, as written, you know, it is pretty extensive. There's a combination of an emergency sick leave approach with an expansion of the Family Leave Act that would put, you know, a level of compensation that goes from something in close to 30 days worth of compensation for workers, and you know, they could combine with any sick leave benefits they already have. Not full compensation, there's some limits around it, but they did put within it some exemptions. And the exemptions, one of them allows for companies that have 50 or fewer employees to apply for an exemption if they could demonstrate that it could completely, you know, destroy the company. So that could apply to a number of home care companies. Haven't seen any specs out yet on that whole application process, but you know, you can expect they will be flooded with requests for that, and they'll probably have to end up expediting in some capacity, maybe presumptive approvals. The other is an exemption for healthcare workers. Unfortunately, what Congress did was not define healthcare workers any differently than it was already defined under the Family Leave Act, which is a very narrow definition focusing in on parties like physicians and nurse practitioners, as compared to nurses are not even included in it, let alone home care workers who are providing a home care aide level of service, personal care assistant level of service. So Congress, I don't know whether they actually thought it through enough or not, because they clearly under pressure in a rush to get some remedies out there. So there is an effort underway to get the Department of Labor to redefine healthcare workers, because it is a regulatory, not a statutory definition, which means DOL can make the change. And so the industry has banded together to seek a broader definition that would encompass all of home care, from the professional nurses and therapists on through to the skilled home care aide services. There may be some issues, you know, once you get past the home health aides on personal care, but we believe that they are also healthcare workers, even if they're helping feed somebody or transfer them from the bed to the bathroom. It's all because of infirmity, not because they're looking for somebody to do the physical functions for them. Their conditions require that. Their healthcare conditions require that. So this is, you know, a path which we've already started down. We would really hope that there would be a sensible decision coming out of the Department of Labor, because if those people who are receiving, say, you know, 6-8 hours a day of personal care services don't have those services available to them, where do they go? And if they stay home without those services, clearly their condition is going to deteriorate. And the next thing you know, they're in an ambulance on their way to a hospital that doesn't have any beds. So we see it as a clear healthcare kind of status that they have. Now, there's a tension here that exists. They're needed as workers. They, you know, themselves have family members and such. So they've got to, you know, rework this. And the Democrats, I know, and the Senate have just brought this up on the most recent bill out there, is that there's got to be stronger supports for the workers in order to have somebody to take care of those children of theirs that are out of school, or their spouse who is home ill, you know, of one condition or another, virus or not virus related. So we've got, you know, this is no easy thing, but, you know, this is a voice that the home care communities pulled together to try to get the Department of Labor to at least create the opportunity for exempting those healthcare workers who are necessary to our whole population.
And when we were hopping on the phone for this before we started taping, I think you mentioned there's another Senate Republican bill that's out there that might be relevant to this conversation.
Yeah, it is like another level of action. This one's more around action for providers of services like home health agencies and hospices, and even beyond. And the bill coming out of the Senate was fully Republican at this point. The Democrats have indicated they want other things, and it's not like that they opposed what's in it. They want something more in it. So we hope to see some resolution around this in the near term. everybody is in a rush to get something happening. And on the home care related sides of it, you've got several things of note. One of them is to eliminate the application of the telehealth restrictions that are focused on practitioners, physicians, and NPs and alike, leaving CMS with the authority to extend it beyond that. We are looking for a change which is consistent with that, but not in the bill at this point. That is that telehealth services in home health and hospice be considered for reimbursement purposes the equivalent of in-person visits when those visits are clinically possible to be done through telehealth, and many of those services can be. We believe we have support for it. Some congressional offices have been told by CMS that they don't think they need legislation to do it. And so CMS is itself evaluating whether to be able to expand it that way. There was another change, in this current Senate bill, which would allow non-physician practitioners, nurse practitioners, PAs, nurse midwives and such, to certify Medicare eligibility for the home health benefit, and to then allow for them to issue orders under the home health benefit, provided it's consistent with the scope of practice under state law. This is actually an item we've had in the advocacy mix for 13 years. Timing-wise, we shouldn't be in a crisis to do it, but in this crisis, it would help because right now, these NPs are having to pass paperwork over to MDs who don't even know the patient. So why would we take up the time of two practitioners to do the job that one can do? That was a good thing that was in there. There's also an interesting piece about doing Medicaid home and community-based services in the hospital. We're trying to really understand what that is. We want to take no credit for that being in there, nor do we want to take any blame for it, but we don't even understand it right now. So we're trying to get a better understanding of what that might mean. It is possible what it means, and this would be our best interpretation and would fit with what we've been advocating, which was to create a hospital in the home concept, meaning instead of paying up to a nursing home level for home care to be delivered as an alternative to a nursing home stay, you pay up to a hospital level to have the equivalent of hospital services in the home setting. That would be a wonderful improvement. And we believe that's probably what's intended. It is what we've been advocating for. Somebody crafted the language, and it's not something I'm familiar with language-wise, but we believe that may be the direction that it's taking, which would be really a very, very important move to create a Medicaid, home-based hospital at home kind of concept, because we don't want senior citizens, anybody over 60. I don't want to call them senior citizens or elderly because I'm well over 60. And if I'm an old person, then my brain is still a teenager, perhaps. but still, so those are the things that are in that legislation now. And it is not finalized in the Senate. It's not voted on in the Senate. It has solid Republican support. It could pass in the Senate probably with Republican support, but the House of Representatives also has to pass it. So we're seeing these as opportunities for even further improvements, but we do like the direction the Congress is taking and its awareness of the importance of care in the home.
Even outside of the Medicaid arena, this idea of hospital at home seems like such a good one right now for a lot of reasons. One, you could prevent people from going to overloaded hospitals in the first place. Two, you could take some people with lower acuity, maybe, they could be treated at home out of the hospital. And, three, just you could keep track of people as their conditions progress. Maybe you start them at home, they go to the hospital, you bring them back at home. So I think that there's a lot of good momentum around this idea of hospital at home. I want to take a step back, and this question just kind of came up as you were talking. There's always discussions about bailouts, right? And sorry if I'm putting you on the spot here. I think a $50 billion bailout for the airline industry. To me, it seems like it would be a good idea not to give home health and home care providers a quote unquote bailout, but it seems like a lot of times policymakers are so worried about fraud, waste, and abuse, but maybe this is a time to be pumping financial resources into the space, similar to what the government does with other industries. Any thoughts on that, or if it would ever be a possibility?
I think it's more than a possibility. For example, the Senate bill I referenced, I didn't indicate that within it also is a suspension of the 2% sequestration, which takes 2% away from every provider, every practitioner, every healthcare sector within the Medicare program. And that in this bill would be suspended for the rest of the year. That wouldn't be a major infusion of dollars, but it would be a starting point. We know that Congress is looking at more than that. Our push on the telehealth side, to tie it into the reimbursement system, is to stabilize the financial basis for home health agencies and hospices. It really won't fit for the personal care services side. But there is also the development, separate and distinct from the bill that I've mentioned, this $1 trillion package that is looking to infuse some money. It might include bailouts. I know the administration's looking for an airline bailout of $50 billion, but there, in the last iteration of it, from what I read, there is this undesignated fund of money that's in the hundreds of billions of dollars as well. So I think there's a clear recognition, actually a priority recognition, that healthcare needs the financial support if it's going to be there and expand virtually overnight, expand to be there during the pandemic. So no one should be looking at what they might be reading in the headline of a newspaper about an airline bailout and believe that healthcare has been forgotten, and that, it's amazing what we've seen happening in just a few weeks between the White House, the Congress, the regulators, and the healthcare industry. So, I haven't yet found anybody from 1918 who went through a pandemic before. So a lot of the healthcare industry, if not all of it, and the Congress as well, is learning how to get there. But I feel very confident in saying that the White House and the Congress is quite well aware of the financial needs of the healthcare sector, and they're not going to abandon them. I mean, we've even offered some micro proposals like eliminating the reduction in the WRAP payment so the providers could have revenues come in. So the door's been open to lots and lots of discussions. We might see the micro stuff addressed at some later point than the macro stuff. The priority right now is getting people care, combined with getting the protective equipment and getting the testing out there. When I say, that's not Matt's priority. That's the healthcare world and the Congress's and White House's priority.
Bill, I know you have a call with CMS coming up here. Do you have maybe another 5 minutes or so to wrap this conversation?
Sure.
So in line with what you were just talking about, there has been a ton going on in the past week plus. I mean, it's hard for us at Home Healthcare News to keep up with everything, but we're trying to do our job to keep our readers informed too. Somebody made the comment to me the other day that there has been so much going on. It seems like that the home health space, the home care space, has fast forwarded almost 5 years when it comes to telehealth in particular, but maybe some other flexibilities. And I think, there is the chance that a lot of this is done on an emergency basis, but it works and it's kept. Do you think like maybe that could be a silver lining of this crisis, that home health providers really are able to prove their mettle, and then in the future they have more flexibility just generally?
I mean, without a doubt. And I think what I've seen so far, home health care has really shined in terms of all that they're doing in their relationship with hospitals and physicians, on their focus on solutions that are practical to be put in there, in the receptivity we've seen coming from Congress and from CMS. It's an indication that home health care is being recognized for value. Many people may have seen one of the early press conferences from the White House, and standing right behind the president was a representative of home health, an individual who works for the LHC group. He was bringing the home health message throughout and was extraordinarily well received there. And, when home health care, ends up on that stage, I'd say that means something special in terms of the recognition of the value. And I agree with you, Bob, that there is a very solid chance that once we get through all of this crisis time, the experiences that home health is bringing into the healthcare world will be remembered and will be embraced and will probably find permanence, including the technology side of it, but also the ability to provide much more than what some people think, short-term, care on a post-acute care basis instead of full-blown acute level of care. And also the respect coming from the workers that are going into the homes in these very, very difficult times. So, you know, putting themselves at risk, no matter what level of equipment they have, they're still putting themselves at risk. So I am very much, you know, smiling when I think of what home health care and what hospice and home care overall has done in just a very, very short time. And, you know, they have absolutely distinguished themselves, and that will pay off in terms of increasing the role of home care going forward.
It's funny that you mentioned that White House national address that took place last Friday with the LHC group executive participating. I was literally sitting in a dentist chair, and there was a TV on in the office, as you know, the dentist is working on my teeth. And I'm like, of course this is happening right now when I'm completely unavailable. So I'm getting my teeth drilled while frantically texting my team at HHCN, turn on the TV. So that's just a funny aside. But again, I know you have to get going. So final question, whether, you know, you want to talk to home health providers, home care agencies, or hospice providers, just any general advice for what they could do to help with the support? Should they be, you know, writing to their members of Congress? What steps could they take?
Well, I think first off, you know, it's a cultural thing. They need to stay strong. This is a very pressured time for everyone. And everything I've seen indicates that they stay strong now, but the pressure is going to increase. So they have to keep up that resolve to care for people. You know, that may sound like my attempt at a General Patton speech, but it's something which had to be said. But otherwise, you know, I think they need to keep their staff fully informed. They have to do whatever they can to keep their staff safe, not just for the sake of keeping their staff healthy, for their staff's sakes only, but it's for the safety of everybody out there. So the number one thing really they need to be focusing in on is that awareness training, that support with equipment side of it, the proper assignment of people, the ability to recognize when they're facing a burnout aspect of from their care, all of those kinds of things. And last, yes, I mean, we have a campaign that's up on our website that is a virtual campaign. We have our lobby effort set to do en masse on Tuesday next week. So all you have to do is go to NAC.org, and there is on our website, our virtual lobbying campaign. It's a quick and short message about home care and technology value and the telehealth kinds of things, you know, to just put in front of the members of Congress electronically in full force, because even though we are finding ourselves highly respected and highly valued, we have to have that voice out there as loud and clear as possible. So I think those are the recommendations I give from NAC 20754, you know, on Bill Dombey's home right now.
That's Bill Dombey, president of the National Association for Home Care and Hospice. Bill, I hope you are staying safe and healthy yourself. Thank you so much for carving out some time for Home Healthcare News. You know, we wish you the best of luck in advancing some of these priorities moving forward.
Well, thank you, and thank you for all you do at Home Healthcare News, Bob.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Disrupt. For more news and insights on the home health and home care industries, subscribe to our daily or weekly newsletters at homehealthcarenews.com. We know how important information is right now, so we're going to do everything in our power to get you the latest updates as soon as possible. I'm Robert Holly, and this has been a production of Aging Media Network, Chicago, Illinois.